Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
And welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. We are in Columbus, Ohio, on location.
The Mecca.
The Mecca for
crime
number two, what I like to call the duble, Naked Gun 2.5 with Mr. Jim Wendler.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks
yes,
for coming.
Yes, and we're back at Mikey's Late Night Slice in Columbus, Ohio.
But this time we got a bartender.
Yes, yeah. We do.
And you're going to see some people rolling back and forth, but we got a bartender, so we might be able to get some drinks, have a good time.
Daiquiris? Daiquiris.
We had such an amazing opportunity to interview Jim last year and fucking just cut it up and wrap that we decided to come back for
just so everyone knows, I've been here for fucking like an hour, and that's we've just been talking.
Shit.
Yeah.
What, that's the meat and potatoes.
And I'll be honest, like, this is cutting into our talking time.
Well, what sucks is, unfortunately, Jim and I only get to visit once a year, but when we do, I feel like we got to not only cover a lot of distance, but it's like two old friends getting a chance to sit down and bullshit.
Well, it's and then I learned last time that John here gave up a opportunity to go to Nebraska during the glory fucking years. And I still think about that occasionally. I'm God, like, God, what
damn
a
you.
Fucking idiot.
We have since interviewed Boyd Epley.
High school.
94. That was the fucking heyday.
So 95.
Yeah.
So you would have had one national.
Yeah.
Trip. Well, two.
Yes.
You, I don't know.
Yeah, two.
You wouldn't have.
Yeah,
bought.
No, I fucking.
Maybe four. We don't
believe
know.
Believe me.
Because 98, we beat you guys, Nebraska, as if you went to Nebraska.
Yeah.
But that 97 team was fucking legit.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Michigan, you don't
and,
share.
And I would have been a junior. Like, that would have been rated my, like, right in the prime of it.
Well, I can talk. I don't know if you guys got to meet Boyd Epley. Did you see his hair? It's fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
He's still got
it's
it.
Like a helmet. It's like Jimmy Johnson, the strength coaching world.
I don't know if you saw the podcast we did with him. But we got in deep on all, like, the Nebraska fucking metabolic conditioning cycles.
Well, you know what? That's Mike Arthur. Did you know that?
It was Mike Arthur, but
Kramer.
It was also Dr. Kramer.
Doctor, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
So since then, we ended up meeting up with Tom Newman, who they brought in to kind of transpose and bring all that information out of Dr. Kramer.
Okay.
And it was like Boyd Epley, Dr. Kramer, and...
Newman, applied it to Yale. So a bunch of smart kids that he was able to get results despite of their limited genetics.
Yeah, so Tom's become a fucking
great
hell
dude.
Of an ally of ours and a really sharp cat.
So he's at Yale right now?
No,
he was, health got in the way.
Is he an older gentleman?
No.
He's
brain. He had a brain tumor. He started a foundation, 40 Staples. Yep. Okay. Check it out.
Yeah.
So what's funny is, I had like an old VHS tape of the Husker Power. This was probably an 88, 87 video.
Yeah.
Probably around there. And they had like the hang clean, they should squat bench, hang clean and stuff. Yeah. And they talk about the Husker Power Index where they do like the 40 yard, whatever, all the different tests.
Dude, when I went on my recruiting trip, we sat in there and he put it up on a big screen and then asked me all my numbers. Yeah. And then it printed me out and gave me a number. And he's like, "You're a year away from being ready." His hair still looks the fucking same.
It's a little grayer, but not much.
Yeah, not much.
I got an elevator with him at the first NSCCA. Is that what it's called? Or CSCCA, sorry.
Yeah.
Conference. And I was just like, "Cold hell, be cool, motherfucker. Be cool.
Be cool.
Tell that bitch to be cool.
Fucking tell that motherfucker to chill out, honey, buddy."
So, but what's funny is, like, you know, it wasn't until many years later that I realized what they did. It was completely antithesis to what I thought they did as far as how they did their circuits.
Really?
Because I had no idea they did stuff like that. I thought it was just like, you know, bench and then did accessory, which is like...
No. So when I was in college...
That shit was it's fucking brutal.
We had our strength coach ended up getting fired. Steve Marici comes in. We bring in a guy named Todd Rice. So we show up after winter conditioning, and he put in the Husker Power metabolic conditioning cycles. There were trash cans next to every fucking squat station. And like, dude, now having known, not only done the program, gone through it, talked to Boyd, talked to Tom, done all the research, used it on a ton of people, he basically didn't even spit on the tip and just fucking jammed it in there dry, because it was like three sets heavy, and he didn't give us any guidance. People were puking, falling out. Like there's a whole baby Husker. There's a whole maturation phase.
Well, they didn't
even
do it. I think their freshman year, they didn't do it.
No. So and you had to be strong enough to do the Husker because you had to move 30,000 pounds.
Well, I also like how he essentially said, "All right, freshman, you're not allowed to do this."
Yeah, that's what they did.
And he made them watch and they had to cheer.
Wanting, like,
fucking genius.
Yep.
But there was a whole physiological adaptation that takes place, and the idea of lactate bathing, and especially what they were doing is they were priming the muscles, lactate bathing, like the physiological response was phenomenal. Tom Newman told me he ran it with some of his assistants. They had a Brazilian girl that they put it through it. She started developing black arm hair and like armpit hair. And he's like, all of a sudden she had like a mustache and her voice deepened. And they were like, "Oh my God, I don't know what you did with this." And she's like, "I don't know where this arm hair." And he's like, "Fuck the arm hair. What happened to your fucking voice there, Billy D. Williams?" And he's like, "Dude, it is a hormonal response that is extremely powerful."
Now, I could talk all day on this. So when you guys did it, now you guys admit it did it wrong. Is that correct?
Well, so the problem is, we did it wrong.
Hold on one second. Did you guys, did everyone have to start with the squat, or did you guys start at different things and then some guys, do you see, this is what I think as a coach. I'm like,
everybody started at the squat.
So then there was a line of fucking dudes.
So what we did is we had different groups. So we had like, there was two morning groups.
Okay.
So there was a 6 a.m. group and then there was a 7 a.m. group. So what happened is the group A, group B, part of the guys started outside and did plyos and runs and then came in and did it.
Gotcha.
The other group started there and then went out and did plyos and runs. And
which
then there
must
two
be real fucking fun.
Yeah, so you're out there doing plyos and runs and then you come in and basically get your shit pushed in.
I'd rather do plyos and runs before I squat.
100%. Yeah. So the problem is we got no direction on this.
Yeah, just load the
irony
bar.
Of this, which is hilarious.
And three
is,
rounds. You didn't
is,
say
yeah,
that
no,
yet.
No, we got three rounds.
Yeah.
Todd Rice, who is our strength
Day
coach.
Day one.
Is now the personal trainer coach for the Busa brothers. So all of a sudden, when you saw the dipshit Busa brother being like, "How much money you make?" Because he's like, he's
Bosa.
Bosa.
What I love about the Bosa brothers, though, is their dad was a first round pick,
yeah.
but he was like 15th. So I wonder if they make fun of him for not being in the top 10.
What's hilarious is he went down to Miami and
he
got hurt.
Ew, dad.
He got hurt and didn't have a good career and then ended up investing his money into gyms and being successful outside of football. But his dad was sharp enough when, you know, those two knuckleheads came up to hire Todd Rice to be their personal coach. And that's why those kids are monsters. Todd Rice, for all of his idiosyncrasies and shortcomings, is a phenomenal strength conditioning coach and one of the best.
So it's well, they have some genetics.
Yeah. Genetics, geography, and opportunity.
Yeah,
best thing
you there's a – because I see – I've always wanted to do my version of what – you know, with the limited shit that we have, because you have to have a lot of equipment. I mean,
you don't really have to have a lot. So we found a way to do it in a garage gym setting.
Yes, but I'm saying for 60 kids.
Oh, fuck.
It's not going to fucking happen.
So what you'd have to do is you'd have to cut them into basically three groups. You'd have to do groups of 20.
But everything, and I've gone over in my head, like the loading parameters, like the realistic loading parameters. Like, listen, the first couple weeks, like,
I don't want
you guys dead.
Well, what we do is we do a, what's called a baby husker, where we do like an introduction phase where we do one round. We let everybody figure out their weights, what they can handle. And then we kind of give them like a little bit. It's almost like a little bit of foreplay.
Yes.
And then we kind of like build up. And then we get into a light, heavy, medium. We didn't do all that. Todd Rice literally didn't even spit on the tip and just fucking jammed it in there.
You think you want to win?
Dude.
All that bullshit.
People fucking puking, throwing up in trash cans. Fucking coaches screaming, calling people quitters.
Did you guys have sport coaches in there? Your
position? Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Offensive
line coach. Spotting.
Fucking worse. Dude, offensive line dude. Coach my huge calves. And
yeah, just real fat. Dude.
Socks up here.
I might have told you the story.
Bike
that
shorts.
When we came back after summer, we were like, you know, we had to come in and do all of our testing and fucking working out and shit. And so I go to squat. I think I'm 19 years old. I squat at 6'10". And so as I go take out my final fucking 1RM, as I walk it back, all of a sudden, I feel somebody fucking slap me as hard as they can in the stomach. And I look in the mirror, and it's Mariucci. Mariucci had been walking in and fucking threw the spotter out of the way, my spotter, and basically he was going to spot me on this. He fucking slaps me and starts screaming me in the air.
I go down
and I stand up with it. And he fucking literally, as I stand up, pushes me. And I fucking basically launched the bar into the rack and almost fucking killed myself.
I've watched a lot of 49ers games as a kid. I've always said if I need a big bench and I need a big squat, you know who I look to for a
Steve
spot?
Mariucci?
Yeah. Just thinking about giving him a call.
I'm at the
what do you got, Steve?
I'm at the combine and I walk over and I see Mariucci and I hadn't seen him because obviously he was our coach and he went to the Niners. So he's like, you know, walking around.
I didn't
like
know Mariucci was a wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he was our coach.
Because he
at
was
Cal.
Part of the Holmgren.
Yeah, Green Bay.
And then he went to Cal.
He went
that?
To Cal for 1 year and then they hired him to go to the Niners.
Okay. I didn't know.
So I, you know, a couple years later, I show up to the combine and Mariucci's there. And he's like, you know, he's all fucking twitchy, like he's doing cocaine and pasta every fucking where he goes.
Dude, he's got that hair. He's got the coke
dude,
hair.
Dude, he, like, oh, good dude, fellas.
In the 80s, dude, he had a comb in that back pocket, and you knew it, too. Oh. It's sticking out a little bit.
He probably put a little olive oil on there just so it stood up. And I saw him, and I was like, you know, trying to talk a little shit to him. And he wasn't all as friendly. And I told him, I was like, you know what? You done changed.
Yeah.
It went to your head a little bit.
Well, he inherited some. It was him and then George, who was the coach after Bill Walsh. George.
Oh,
is that his name?
Yeah, it was the guy with the white hair.
Yeah.
So it was Bill Walsh, and then it was George.
Come on.
Not Blanis.
No, but whatever. It was him and then Mariucci. And so Mariucci was getting basically the third generation Walsh guys.
He had Steve Young, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that was Steve Young at the end of it. And then Garcia.
Jeff Garcia.
Jeff Garcia walks like a duck.
Yeah.
Dude, Jeff Garcia is a journeyman. Holy shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, dude, like that was but I'm telling you, man, that Husker power, I'm not kidding you. There were very few things that I remember as vividly as I do that. But I'm telling you, physiological response associated with that is next to fucking nothing.
See, that's something I'm
gonna
can you do me a giant favor after you give this? You see that black bag on that? Yeah, my man bag. Can you just bring it? Thank you so much. I didn't want to be a dick.
What do you want to like?
Appreciate it.
Man purse?
Why don't you manage your own fucking business, dude?
We got fucking 9mm?
That's in my right here.
Perfect.
There we go.
Here's to you.
Here's to you.
Here's to you, Jim.
Big giant fuzzy dildo.
There you go. Good.
The
nice old fashioned.
Do you have bitters in there? Oh,
so
we made old fashions a couple Thanksgivings, and everyone did the.
So the significance of the old fashioned, obviously, you know. So my old man passed away 4 years ago.
Okay.
February 28th. It was yesterday. So. And I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it was 4 years ago yesterday, February 28th. My old man passed, and this was his drink. So I'm not necessarily a huge old-fashioned fan, but I've become an old-fashioned fan because it's my dad. So whenever I have one, I always think, like, here's to you, Pop. Is that straight dip spit?
Yes.
So you've been spitting in that bottle all day.
I got it off the Bosa brothers.
So you're like, when you pulled it out, I was like, wow, you keep your spitter jar ready there? And you took a sip, and I'm like, fuck, you know how tough Jim Wendler is? He drinks his fucking spitter jar.
I quit dipping tobacco, so I just have nicotine pouches now, which is a giant step for me. What a fucking horrible habit. But I don't have to spit anymore because I'm like, my stomach's got to be like higher right now or not.
Well, how you feeling, dude? You the back's a little tight.
Yeah, it's been better recently, but.
What happened? I mean, dude, you squatted 1,000 pounds. You know, you fucking trained at Westside, which can't be good for your back. You played college football, but it was really the motorcycle accident.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I think that was kind of the giant bat that broke the camel's back. It wasn't a straw, but I think that, you know, once even prior to that, I knew shit was not right. But I think I could have survived it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then, like, I do a ton of thinking, like a horrible amount of thinking, which maybe not be good. And you got guys like Randy Couture or Tom Brady or something. And those guys obviously do a good job taking care of their body. But there's some bodies just fucking break down. There was a linebacker for the Cowboys that was probably 10 years ago, super explosive. He made a great play, jumped up in the air, and went, tore his fucking quad right off. Damn. And it's like, it wasn't lack of training. That's just like your body's fucking break. And I was like, I got an above average body for some things, and it's like I pushed it as far as I could, and then it's like it broke. And I don't think other guys have done way more and have been fine, and other guys have done much, much less and have been worse.
But I think we talked about this earlier, right? Like when you came in, you're like, man, I wish I had done more. And, you know, something we talked about is like, fuck, dude, like.
I can go on and on about this. I'm going to talk about this.
Fucking go.
And I thought it because I was coming to see you, and I was like, how do I put this? Like, everyone's got their own, like, where I am, and then you're physically and athletically way above where I am. And I was able to get a little bit higher than much higher than I should have genetically. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, yes, everyone, very much.
Yeah.
And the problem was I had physical gifts. But I trained like I was supposed to be Barry Sanders or something. And I wasn't. I should have exploited the gifts I had. I think I would have been better off. And I watched. Wait, no, so.
What do you mean? Like,
so,
the gifts.
here's an example. Junior year, I ran fucking easy, like 11:30, 2 miles in unlaced Chuck Taylors. I wanted to see if I could do a sub 6. Wasn't even hard. Hadn't even run really. But do you know that running a mile makes you slow, right? Remember that? Everyone would say that. If you run any long distance. So I that was something I could do. I was an okay 400 runner. I think I ran like a 52 in the 400 meters. Not great, but not way better than most people.
Yeah, it's not like you're running 48.
What's that?
It's not like you're running a 48.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Because then you would have been a fucking sprinter at Ohio State.
So the problem was is – I saw how we were supposed to train, right? If you want to be fast, you have to train fast, and that's great, but I wasn't terribly fast. I should have exploited what I had, and I shouldn't have gained a ton of weight when I was playing football because it doesn't fucking matter. Now, hold on.
Dude, it was a different time, dude.
It's a different time, but I remember thinking, why am I doing this when I'm better at that?
Yeah.
And there's every dumb decision I made during training – and I can, like, there's a bunch of them. Some of them I just didn't know. But when I didn't follow, like, what I, I'm like, there's no way. This doesn't seem right.
What
do I fucking know?
Listeners, what position and then why do you feel the weight took away from your abilities?
Because, let's put it this, I was about, I don't know, anywhere from 225 to 250 in that area. And I always got better when I got lighter.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but that's different. Like, so college football is different.
But I could have been infinitely better at 210.
So linebacker, fullback,
100%, and you would have been fucking faster. But yeah. But there's a deal in college football where everybody's kind of big and slow. So they want you to be bigger and slower.
Yes.
I actually was smaller in the NFL than I was for most of my college career.
Well, I remember when Bielema was at Arkansas. I don't know if this was exact time, or it might have been when he was at Wisconsin, but they had like the biggest O-line out of the NFL. And right.
Yeah.
And around that time, or plus or minus 5 years, that's when the Elder Shanahan was at Denver. And that's when they run all that zone read mm-hmm. shit. And they had the smallest O-line.
Yep.
And who had the best running? They didn't matter who the fuck they put back there. No. Right? They always had a
Terrell Davis, MVP.
Shit, dude.
Yeah. But there was guys that are like, hey, you want to gain 1,000 yards? Like, yeah.
Yeah. And do you know why? They ran fucking inside-outside zone, dude.
But those guys were fucking solid. Yeah. And I remember I think they had the great center.
Dan Neal?
No, for the Cowboys.
Oh,
number 55.
Stepnowski.
You look at him sometimes.
Yeah, Step was 275.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I remember when I was a rookie, we had Dave Diaz-Infante was one of our old guys.
Okay.
And I remember we went to the Super Bowl, and I hung out with him and Marsh Schlereth, Stink. And, dude.
Guys had more surgeries than any
animal. Oh, dude. And you know
what? Scoped on Monday.
Yeah. Scope on Monday, play on Sunday. He had like 29 surgeries.
And two rings.
Yeah. But like those dudes were 6'2", 6'3", 275, 280 pounds. And their whole offensive line – I mean, ironically, when I was went to the combine, I had been getting blown up by their offensive line coach, and I showed up, and this is fucking hilarious. I've told Texas story. So I was training down in Kennedy, Louisiana with a guy named Tom Shaw.
Yeah, I know.
Tom is inherently cheap. He had a broken scale. So I stepped on the scale at 300 pounds. Little did I know, Tom's scale was broken. And I was fighting. He was cheap. It's the only thing I could fucking put it on. I was fighting to be 300 pounds. And I remember looking in the mirror and thinking, God damn it.
How am I not?
I have never fucking been this big at 300. I get to the combine. I step on the scale at 317. And I had basically my goal was to come in 300, 298, 300, because I wanted to be able to like go out and work out for the Cowboys.
Yes.
But also for the Broncos and this. And I stepped on 317, and I was like, oh, fuck. I didn't run. I ran 503. I didn't do it. Like, I basically was fucking 17 pounds over. And
It's
significant. And fuck, dude, I fucked up. And I was 300 on that scale. I was 317 on their scale. So, and I remember a knock on the door from the Broncos offensive line coach, Alex Gibbs, who was like.
Is that Joe Gibbs's?
Yeah, I think it was Alex Gibbs. Fuck, I think it was Alex Gibbs, 99. Yeah, it would have been Joe Gibbs' son or fuck whoever.
Somewhere, yeah.
Potentially.
Knocked on the door and was like, you're too fucking big. I'm not working you out.
Oh.
And then they ended up taking a guy named Lenny Friedman from Boston College who was absolute dog shit. He played with Brzezinski. And then I ended up getting drafted in fourth round of the Eagles and going in starting, which is fine. But, like, I fucking legitimately – I was a guy coming out of college that would have been a fucking Broncos offensive lineman and would have loved to have been 280, 285. Yeah. I had no business. And I remember when they told me they wanted me to weigh 325.
Oh.
And I remember
– I can weigh that for one day.
Dude, I weighed 326.
For one play.
And I remember – I've told this story. I go out and I'm playing left tackle. And I remember I set back and I was like
hold on.
As I'm setting, felt like I was a big planet and there was little fucking planets orbiting me. As the dude was like running around me, I was like, like in slow motion. And I remember in my head, I'm like, you're too fucking. And I literally went home. I had like 6 weeks.
Giant shit. Yeah.
Dude, I remember I went home. I was living down in Florida at the time. I went home. I had 6 weeks. I ate one salad a day. Went and lifted weights and went and ran and basically like kicked the soccer ball for like 3 hours every night and just sprinted. Like kicked the ball, sprint, kicked the ball. Showed back up at about 301, 302. And that's when I ended starting was fine. And like they were like, oh, you lost all this weight. I'm like, well, it's because I was going to get fucking cut.
Yeah.
If I would have listened to you people, I'd be fucking on the street.
That's right.
I'd be bouncing at a bar, you know? Yep.
Yeah, it's the – and, it was a different – maybe not at the end of my career, but – when I was in the early 90s growing up in Big Ten country, everything was two tights, fullback.
Well, you were talking about Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I mean, those dudes had all their shirts lifted up. And
well,
fucking, they were. I mean, dude, their tight ends were offensive linemen.
Yeah, those guys. I think I told you this story. We probably on the last podcast, but when my wife first met me, she was not really into football, and I remember watching an old '95 Nebraska game that was on college.
Yeah, like ESPN throwbacks.
Yeah. And so I'm just watching it, and she sits down. She's like, "Oh my god, what team is this? There's no one fat. These guys look amazing." And I never does like, "Holy shit!" And so I went back and I watched a lot of those games.
Yeah.
But there was a on YouTube they have something. I'm going to, like, for the 95 and 97 seasons, they go over each game. And after each game, they interview like three or four players. They talk about it. And then they go, it's like a little documentary about the season. That same, remember Scott Frost?
Yeah.
So I'm watching this, and the kicker, he was kicked there for 4 years. I think he's the all time leading scorer in Nebraska. Fucking neck. And I was like, if you didn't know that was the kicker, you'd be like, yeah, safety, like hard hitting mother, like John Lynch style. So anyway, this is what was interesting. So I watched a similar thing just to see on UCF when they won their fake national championship. You know, they went undefeated. Right. Amazing fucking season. I'm watching it. Everyone's donkey. Everyone. They look like doughboys.
Yeah.
No necks.
Was that
just
Blake
kinda...
Bortles QB?
No. This was when Scott Frost was there.
Oh, okay.
This was – so that's why I was like, well, maybe Scott Frost maybe had brought some over. The point being is – now, not saying that they weren't great football team, but, like, the physical appearance was so vastly different to me. And I just was, like, dumbfounded. And, like, maybe that's how the game is now. I don't know, but I refuse to accept it. I really do. I'm like, I'm not – and what I'm doing right now is not even close to what these – you know. We're not playing college football. I don't have those kind of recruits. But
would you ever go coach college football?
No, never.
Like if somebody knocked on the door, like
you,
Nebraska.
You know how much money you'd – like my wife and I have talked about this.
Somebody knocks on the door and they're like, Jim Windler, we want you to go fucking strength coach in Nebraska. I hope you would call me immediately after. Be like, well,
I would have to.
I need you.
I would need someone like an O-line guy.
You're like, Wellborn, I need you.
Yeah, I need a speed guy because I don't want to like I don't. Like, it would have to be life changing money. Because
dream team.
Yeah,
I would fucking do it. If you were like, dude, let's go do it. I'd be like, one more job.
It would be fucking fun. But I think, and I'm just gonna. There's nothing I'm gonna tell you or anyone here that hasn't been involved in college athletics. The role of a strength coach, or probably most coaches, there's so much. Strength coaching is not even your full time job. And that's what I fucking hated because I was, and that's all I wanted to do be was like after college football. I'm like, well, this is something I understand. I love college football way more than the NFL. And it's funny because my dad doesn't like the NFL. I grew up like that. He's like, listen, college, like the fucking drum line. Like, go 110,000 people at Ohio State. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to find that in the NFL.
Dude, I'm on the exact opposite. I can't watch college football, it's too slow.
Oh, okay. So hold on. So, but the pageantry.
Yeah.
Everything. And that's how I grew up. I just loved it. And now my oldest son, Mason, all his buddies like football. And he's the only one.
Is he a football player?
He played football in high school. He's no longer. I can talk all about that, too. That's a fucking crazy story about his physical fucking changes. Unbelievable. But, he's the only one of his friends who, like, doesn't. He's like, I don't like the NFL. It's fucking boring. Like, it's just now I didn't play there, but, like, he grew up. It's funny how it just got passed down.
Yeah, sure.
But the problem that I would have is you're not just a strength coach. You're an administrator beyond belief. You've got to put out – like, I remember our strength coach having to go check classrooms. It's like, come on, man. I just want to be a strength coach. And that's – I'm really good
think
at
about
one
it. We
thing.
Could be riding on scooters, fucking chasing these kids around, fucking their world up, making sure they're at classes, getting in there, talking shit.
However, I mean, they make more money than you with the NIL.
I'm going to need my own NIL deal as a fucking strength coach. It's the only way I'm doing
that's,
it.
You know, I thought about that. I'm like, well, what would happen then with, you know, I would obviously have to keep my business and stuff like that. But
yeah, we'd be fine.
But anyway, I don't know. It would have to be really life changing, and it's like,
if somebody,
John,
knocks,
I love my fucking life. I have set myself up in such a simple way. I just like doing
like
what I do.
Like,
and guess who's got more power? Me at London High School or me at Nebraska? Guess who's got more power?
I'm going to go with London High School.
Yeah, I don't have to answer to anyone, and I do a good job. And the community is very everyone has been more than thankful, and I feel like I'm doing something. Like, if I'm really going to be honest, like, I feel like I'm doing something good. And the older I get, I realize that service is where it's at.
You know, when we were on the podcast last, you talked about working with these kids. And it was something that resonated with me. And, you know, I was telling you recently, we started working with these BJJ kids. Yeah. And who are like kids, because they're like my kids. Yep. But when they first came over and, like, we were kind of going through this whole thing, I was like, we don't really have time. Like, I had 4,000 reasons to not do it.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, they were good kids. They fucking needed
us. What did I say? It's hard to what?
It's hard to say no.
It's hard to say no.
And you know why? Because they're good kids. They have the opportunity to be the best. And they needed us. And we had the ability. I always felt that those who have the ability to invoke change have a responsibility to do it. Yes. And there's a lot of fucking pieces of shit. And there's a lot of charlatans and a lot of scam artists and people that don't know what the fuck they're doing out there perpetrating as being experts. And all of a sudden, these kids walk in, and I'm not tooting our own horn,
Coach.
But I like to think Coach. We know a lot better than most people. Yes. And to see these kids come in and soak it up, I couldn't say no. And Texas is like, we don't have time for this and this. And I'm like, you know what?
I'm
a
good guy.
No, you did. But you did. You were like, hey, are we going to make time for this? And we did.
Hey, you got to have someone batting on the other side.
Yeah, no, all the time.
Because now we're workout partners.
No, and you know what? So what will be cool is Chris will come in there.
We don't do that in America.
But I'll tell you this, and I will say this about Victor and Arash and also Philippe. They have hugged us collectively more than my parents have ever hugged
me. Yeah, I'm working on my emotional intelligence with these guys.
But I will tell you this. Those kids are not only hard workers, salt of the earth. Every day they come in and crush it. I know that if I called them, they would bring boots to skulls.
Yeah, well, that's my wife and I have like how we knew and how we still know. Like, we're perfect for each other because I know she'd give me a fucking alibi. That's what we call it.
Well,
are you willing to give me an alibi? Oh yeah, so, he was here all Tuesday night.
These guys actually teach BJJ, and so I take my kids to them, mm-hmm. and like I'll walk in with the kids, and you would think that like Cash, when he walks in, he is like the mayor of that place. Oh, Cashy! They like hug him in this, and like the attention and the work, and like just how they treat my son. I told him, I was like, hey man, like, and they were like, he's a great kid and we're happy to have him. And like, dude, they like take pictures and send it to me. And it's like he has older brothers or like guardian angels.
Yeah.
And like those dudes, like,
well, to the point, you set part of an example for them. Yeah. I'm sure they've had other examples too.
Well, but I
think it's important.
They know that they have support out of me, that anything this, and they expend it to my family. And like, dude, to me, you know, that's like the weight of my heart, dude. Like, if you take care of my kids and my family the way that I will, I'll fucking go to bat for you. So it's been really nice. It's been a good thing. And then I get to go do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with them, which is extremely fucking humbling. I will tell you this. The fact that, like, I have to, like, mentally be okay with some fucking dipshit choking me or fucking putting me in some move where I'm like, hey, you know what? This is a learning process. But so, at the end of the day, I want to fucking literally break skulls. It's fucking hard.
There is I saw a short video clip of a Brazilian black belt in BJJ who he must be someone, I don't know, but he sparred, I guess you call it, sparred?
Yeah, roll.
Roll, okay. With someone who was at the, was it ADCC? What's the
big the ADC. Yeah, the big
Nogi. It wasn't Vegas. Like, I didn't know the name, but apparently this guy is not Gordon Ryan. That's the only person I know.
Yeah,
it's someone of that caliber,
sure.
I guess. And he's like, I rolled with him for 90 minutes. He goes, there's probably about 30 seconds total that I was in a neutral position.
So that guy was a UFC fighter, and he was talking about rolling with Nicky Rutt.
Okay.
So like the guy's got shaved head, and he was on a podcast, and he was like, hey, I'm a legit black belt. I'm a UFC guy. And Nicky Rod fucking had, like, there wasn't 30 seconds. I was in a good position.
Yeah, Ned, he said neutral.
Neutral.
At best, I wasn't getting murdered.
Yeah. So Nicky Rod just fought Penna over in Costa Mesa. So Nicky Rod's a B-team guy. So it's funny. Gordon Ryan and John Danaher. So when they left Puerto Rico with the guys, they had a huge split. I think basically what happened was they were probably all fucking each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something weird happened. And then they all left. Feels like a big lover spat. If you look at it from the outside, it looks like a bunch of dudes that probably did a bunch of weird shit that are a little upset with each other. So then Gordon and Danaher became New Wave. And then it was Nicky Rod and Craig. I can't remember Craig's last name. But they went and started something called the B-Team. So now there's a bunch of rivalry with them. And it's fucking hilarious to see on social media. I mean, but, you know, at the end of the day, man, like, I really appreciate the fact that these guys are fucking training and they're pushing it and they're doing what they should. And you know what? Victor and the guys from Six Blades are right in the mix. And we're training those guys to go fucking literally take scalps and fucking stomp those motherfuckers.
It's good times. It's my youngest son started wrestling this year.
Hmm. God damn it. And, I'm so sad I didn't wrestle.
So the thing that I didn't realize that most people start wrestling around 5.
Yeah.
So he had, and this is honest to God truth. When he went to wrestling practice, he had never even, didn't even know what wrestling was.
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, I just showed him.
How old is he?
It's 11.
11.
And it's been the hardest of all the stuff I've been through. A parent, this is the hardest thing I've ever seen because he has wrestling kids who have half their life. And he won one match all year.
So I'm going to give you a little hint.
So, but hold on. But he still goes to practice every day. And I had this realization. I'm watching him, and I'm like, and I told him, and I'll tell you really what I said off camera because I can't say it on camera. But I said, you can either learn now how fucking shitty things are, or you can learn when you're 25 and you're the biggest piece of shit in the world if you don't know.
Yeah.
And I started looking at, does that make sense? I'm like, you have to learn. And so now, not only that, but the wrestling practices, because we lift weights, him and I do stuff three times a day.
Yeah, I like it. I fucking love where your head's at.
Three times a week, we go out in the garage. It doesn't matter what the weather's like. It's fucking cold. We're training. Yeah, he knows that.
Fucking do it.
But he's never going to get that push unless the coaches do it. I wrote something on my forum today about, like, you don't understand what pushing is until you go to a competitive sport where you really want to win and you have someone pushing you that cares. So he's got a level of exhaustion that most kids don't understand. And it's not, you know what I'm saying, most.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know how to push through that yet. And I'll tell you what, the changes in him have been remarkable. Not, I mean, physically, just from the lifting. He's still fucking skinny. You know, but holy, he takes off his shirt and he's got little fucking biceps now. It's like, if I wrote down what we did every day, training wise, you'd be like, there's no fucking way. I'm like, dude, it works.
Yeah.
We do so little.
Well, dude,
but he's 11. I don't need
Need a ton to solicit the response.
And we, because he's got no testosterone, right? He's 11, very little. We pound the shit out of the same weights over and over again because as soon as you go up 5 pounds, the back starts going like that, right?
Knees cave.
Yeah, all of a sudden. And so we just do, and all of a sudden after like 6 weeks, 8 weeks, fucking 30-pound jump or something, something massive. And he's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, that's when I realized like.
Inter- and extramuscular coordination.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of things that go in there.
It's happening in real time. You're like, holy shit, this is a physiology.
But just because he did 75 for 5 on Monday, it doesn't mean the next Monday you can do 80. It just, that at his level, it doesn't work like that. And so what we started doing, even at the high school, is we just repeat things until they're fucking perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking like they made the rep. It's got to look
perfection.
It's got to be
perfect.
Like I fucking yell at these. I don't know how many times I said, just control on the way down, own it, and bar speed on the way up. Because as soon as that weight starts getting heavy, we pound the shit out of lightweight so much, it's fucking unbelievable. And then it all, we had more success, kids getting stronger, doing lighter weights better than, and that's the first,
the constant pursuit of perfection.
Forces,
the persistent pursuit of perfection.
The special forces, 5 truths that they have, and one of them is quality over quantity.
Compensatory acceleration. So I was 14 years old. George Zangas talks to me about compensatory acceleration. Yeah. As mechanical advantage increases, so does speed. I want you to fucking literally try to break the weights.
Yep.
But the problem is, until you learned actually the technique and how to move from point A to point B, it didn't really fucking make sense.
Because you started.
Because there's a force bleed effect.
Yeah,
because
you're just going
you're all fucking loosey-goosey.
Can we take this opportunity to educate high school football coaches out there No. Against one rep maxes.
Oh my! Well, here's a couple things. You ready for this? I took this up when I was in college, or as a GA. I said, why do we one rep max? But you always say that we're not powerlifters. It makes no fucking sense to me.
No.
No sense.
Louis even told me he would never have a football player do more than 3 to 5 reps.
No, and I can talk all day on this stuff. So I'm going to go off a little bit, but
please do.
Let's go. Plenty of time.
Okay.
So let's just say.
Did you learn this from Jim Laird?
Yeah, that's right. how do I put this? This happened when I was in college, and probably you're in college, probably at the end of your summer thing, you guys took a max on the bench,
yeah.
Took a max on the sure. squat, took a max on the power clean.
First time I ever benched 500.
So what happens when you have a bad day? That day.
Well, hold this on. Is why I fucking hated traditional periodization.
So now we... 12 or what if it was 16, what, 12 weeks?
Yeah, we had a fucking 16-week fucking
training program. So now you're going into fucking 2-a-days feeling like a piece of shit.
This is where I came up with what I called inherent periodization.
Yeah, it's when I had kids have a good day, I'm like, dude, let's run.
Dude, I call it the fucking gambler sets. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
I call them joker sets.
Yeah. Well, you fucking.
That's right.
Well, this is why like mine, single leg. Yeah. Dude, because I tell people, if you come in and you start warming up and the weights are light, that's our fucking day.
Yeah.
Because there's days I've come in where all of a sudden you start working out and you're like, Jesus Christ, is this shit made of andamania?
What did I eat today?
Yeah.
What did I take?
And then you go on other days and you're like, you have to look at the bar. You're like, holy shit, this feels fucking light. Those are the days when I hear the weight feels light. This is the day we're going
to
go for.
I hated
classical periodization because how did I know on that fucking day I was going to be the strongest?
Yep. But John, to highlight that, it's not how I'm feeling. It's how the weights are moving.
Yes.
So just to note that.
Even with that is I did some experiment shit today on some of the more experienced kids, and I'd have to write it out, but the bottom line is the kids were doing okay, and then we started pushing a little bit here and there on working on bar speed, and all of a sudden like they'll hit legitimate maybe like, so their bench is 275, let's say 265 for 8 singles while they're in a circuit,
yeah,
for 25 minutes.
Yeah, because
so now you got 10 fucking singles at around 96%.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of like, and all of a sudden now they're understanding, and this is not everyone, but like how the bar speed should look, and the bar is screaming out of their hands, and I'm like, oh my god, you're finally getting it. Now I got 60 other kids I can't do that with. But I tell you what, we talked a little bit about Nebraska, and once
pause.
I don't know what the fuck that is, but
yeah.
We'll wait for a second.
All right.
Somebody, is there somebody over there?
There we go.
Okay, cool. All right, go on.
So I remember there's an old Hammer Strength, not old, it's on YouTube, of Boyd Epley speaking at the Hammer Strength convention. And sure. It's awesome because Dr. Ken introduces him. I love Dr. Ken.
You know, rest in peace. He was a fucking amazing individual and a complete psychopath.
Did you ever get to talk to him?
In email, okay. I never got to talk to him on the phone, and I regret not going to his house in Long Island.
He sounded like he was old school Long Island, let's put it that way. Thick accent.
Did you ever see any video or pictures of his gym?
Yeah. First of all, I'm more impressed with how pictures were perfectly
done.
Because I've done, my weight room's got pictures up, and it's all just
I've never in my life seen the OCD.
I watched him put weights on the bar OCD style.
Yeah, it was fucking insane.
But I got to talk to him on the phone when I was at Elite, probably, I don't know, half a dozen times maybe. And the stories he would tell me, that's some of the most memorable things in my time, in my life is doing like strength stuff is mm-hmm. Dr. Ken. And, it was just, fucking outrageous stories. And you're like, holy shit. Cause he's been at the, he's the
tip of the spear.
Yeah. And, I'd tell you some of them, I can't say them on camera. That's how bad they are. But Dr. Ken sent me his the steel tip.
Uh-huh.
He has a book, and he wrote the coolest inscription. It's probably my most cherished strength item. And I was like, holy shit! Like it's Dr. Ken. Like,
yeah.
And even when I before I and he was old school hip.
Yeah.
Like fucking, we're going squat till we die. Not
well. I mean, dude. Like it was funny.
He's only 5'6".
Yeah, he was tiny. Somebody asked me recently. So, we do a deal with our annuals on our programs. And so I do a bunch of consults. And one of the guys asked me, he's like, hey, how come you cluster? Or I didn't say cluster. How come you superset all these movements? And I'm like, ugh, they're not fucking supersets. They're clusters. And he goes, why do you call them clusters? I'm like, because fucking I hate wasting time. Yep. If I'm going to squat something heavy, I'm always going to go do opposing movements. And my rest period is moving from other movements.
Yep.
So, like, I'm not going to, like, have you do something and then wait. Because, one, I got 60 fucking minutes. I set the clock and I want to burn it the fuck down. And I found that pushing the capacity piece fucking helps me dramatically. And I started clustering movements just because I didn't want to sit around anymore.
Yeah. And the I have to take some liberties with that because of the group size, but we do, because of Boyd Epley and what we're going back to that at the hammer strength thing, we got off track. He said, and I love it because it's, first of all, it's a godfather, right? So he's like, all right, what's the number one goal for any athlete you coach? And everyone's just sitting there, you know, no one wants to answer it, right?
Right.
Because it's like, it's going to be wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear a part, you know, like a, make them better at their sport. He's like, no shit, we get it. All right, yes. But his big thing was, you got to put muscle on.
Yeah.
And
it's fucking armor.
He talked about, and he talked about the metabolic circuits. Yeah. And he said, my goal every year, I don't know if it was this or another time, but their linemen, they wanted to be about 300 pounds, about 20%. And I went back and looked at, you know, obviously not everyone's perfect, but some of those guys were just fucking huge. And he said, you know, a bigger muscle is a stronger muscle, or is a stronger muscle, is a faster muscle, and agility and all that stuff.
Can generate more force.
And it's so funny because all these years I've been reading all this stuff and, you know, Olympic lifting, and it still just came back like, listen, you got to put some muscle on your body before we do anything.
Dude.
And that's why, like, even with, once my son started getting good at squatting, I'm like, you know what, let's just do sets of 10. If you can do the 10 correctly, like, you think he's going to get, like, list, because he's not doing threes and fives, he's going to get weaker?
Well, I mean, don't let Mark Ripto hear you that.
What's that?
Mark Ripto's going to cook and call you and be like, got to do fives. Yeah, I'm like, but what about sevens? What about fours? What about eights? Yeah.
But I always, like, I'm like, this kid just needs to build some muscle. And the other thing is, like, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Fucking blows.
Dude, so
but anyway, that's how once I heard that from Epley, and this has already been when I was already coaching, I was like, holy shit, that's my goal. Yeah. I've just got to put muscle. And you can only say it a million. The kid's got to eat, and I'm not in control of that. It's very difficult, but I try to put that into the training more than anything. I'm like, listen, we want you to be, I always say the barbell, the squat, trap bar, and the bench press. We want that moving fast. We're going to body build all the assistants.
Dude.
So power the barbell.
And, I think old man Zhang has probably got this from Louis Simmons, because I'm pretty sure I heard this out of Louis's mouth, which was, there's a difference between big and strong.
Yes.
And I remember George saying that to me. And then I think I heard Louis say it. And I think, you know, who knows? Fucking old guys fucking swap shit.
Yeah.
But George's like, there's a big difference between big and there's a fucking big difference between big and strong. And you know what? Like, putting on muscle and looking the fucking part when you walk in, the elevator test, the fucking bus test,
we call it the bus, battle of the bus.
Yeah, when you get off the fucking bus, you want the first guy off. Yep. And you know what? Like, there was a whole reason we did curls, we finished, we did dips, we did all this shit, because you want to look the fucking part. And, you know, you want to be big and strong and look the fucking deal. But muscle has always been insulation. It's been the armor. I mean, if you think about knights going out there to fight each other, you gotta have fucking muscle.
Well, the interesting thing is, when I would read all this stuff,
Joel Wilkes was my host at Nebraska. When I went on there, it was Joel Wilkes was their right guard.
Yeah,
and then it was
how do I know that? I don't even know my wife's birthday.
It was center. I can tell you everyone. Center, and then the other guy was.
You think I'm lying too? Sorry.
The other tackle began with an I. And when I went on my trip, it was fucking awesome. First of all, we went to the Elks Club for dinner, where they had crack crab and lobster, which fucking blew my mind. And
then
we
in Nebraska.
At Nebraska. They flew in cracked crab and lobster and steaks to the Elks Club for us, our dinner. And then we went to a movie. They walked in with their Letterman's jackets, walked behind, grabbed all the candy. We went and sat down, and they signed autographs for fucking 40 minutes before they started the movie. And then they said, "Start this bitch." It was like, I have never in my life
seen. Do you remember the movie?
What was
I can't remember the movie.
What year is this?
1994.
The greatest movie year of all time.
I can't remember the movie.
That Pulp Fiction, right?
Joel
Dumb and Dumber.
It was Forrest Gump.
Yeah, Forrest Gump.
It was Joel
Shawshank.
Wilkes.
No.
Shawshank?
Yeah. Sorry.
We've already had this podcast, so don't worry about it.
I would have to go back and look at their
You know
names.
What? Both Zaneca brothers.
Yeah.
Played.
Yeah. Fucking Zaneca brothers.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to remember who the defensive tackle was.
The black shirts, Nebraska defense. Place at the table.
It wasn't Grant Winstrom. But whoever the defensive tackle,
I think the program was 94.
Or the end.
And then his brother was the defensive end. He was a freshman. I can't remember. What we had drinks at this bar and went outside and we did 1-on-1 pass pro in the street. I was a fucking senior in high school, and they were like, "Wellborn, let's see what you fucking got."
Well, we don't tell drinks. Me you laid down in the street like the program.
Program.
No, we went.
They took that out of the movie.
Outside the bar, you know, in Lincoln, Nebraska, and one of the guys was obviously
what time of year was this?
Fucking winter, right? So we go outside, and dude, I'm gonna tell you another thing that's gonna make you laugh. But so we go outside, and they were like, we went out, and they were like, you know, this is our fucking guy, and they were like, Wellborn, let's do some 1-on-1 pass pro. So we went outside the bar with one of their fucking true freshmen who was a redshirt, and he ended up being, God, I can't remember his fucking name. And we ended up doing 1-on-1 pass pro. And the hilarious part was my host. And this is so embarrassing. He wore a fucking quick belt like this. And ever since then, I've fucking worn a belt like this every fucking day of my life. This is what he was wearing. He was wearing a quick belt. And it was like one of those football belts, you know, like with the slide in.
Yeah.
The football belts. So I saw him wearing it. He just had that on his jeans. And I was like, oh, this is genius. So I wore those for years. And I still have them. And I still wear these fucking quick belts because of that. And I saw it. And I was like, because at that point, I was like, a belt buckle.
You're ready
like,
to pass pro or play it?
So I went out to fucking do pass pro, Lincoln, Nebraska, in the middle. And I got to do it. And I actually did all right.
So this, you know, 10 some odd years later, Kyle Turley tells you to go to a bar. Dressed like you're going to get into a fight or
no,
pass pro?
So there was a funny deal, right, which is hilarious now that you see all the brothers wearing real tight fitted clothes. So there was a time when we were early in the NFL where all the dudes were in all super baggy shit. And so we used to always wear super tight fitted clothes like we still fucking do. And they'd always be like, oh, why are you wearing some pants so tight? And Turley's like, so I can get in a fucking fight. And he's like, I dress like I'm going to go out and get in a fucking fight. And the last thing you want to do is wear baggy fucking clothes. And I was like,
you had that
fucking
shirt
like
over your head?
Yeah.
Or flip flops.
He's like, you know what? That's the other thing. Don't ever wear flip flops to a bar. You get your fucking ass kicked. The most vicious fucking ass whooping I've ever seen was at a bar where a dude was wearing flip flops. This guy fucking got into it. As the guy pushed the dude, he went to lean back and the guy stepped on the flip flop. And the guy like, bing. And he hit the guy like one of those things. He goes, so that's like my deal. Like, don't wear flip-flops to a bar.
Combat boots.
Well, you know what? You got to go out looking for trouble.
Wrap your hands.
Oh, I'm sorry. You need to go out. No, you're not going out looking for trouble. But here's the deal. If trouble finds you, you have to be fucking ready. So that was
always
funny.
Looking over my – checking my six.
Well, you know what? That was the funny thing about going out with Arash and the guys. Like, so I'm out with Victor and Arash and all, like, the dudes at BJJ. They're having a great time. And I realized, I'm like, if anything goes down, I'm pretty sure we're going to fuck up everybody in this place.
Do they all got cauliflower ear?
Yeah.
Oh,
like
big time. Did you see that video of the Oklahoma tight end get his ass kicked by like a 170-pound wrestler?
Yeah.
And so, if you look, the kid's ears
like
all
a
fucked
fast
up.
Food joint. Yeah.
It was at
a
bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the first thing everyone was like, dude, look at the guy's ear. What are you doing?
Yeah. No, you don't do that. One of our neighbors, when I started working with these kids, the BJJ guys, I was like, hey, man, we got to like push your training camp a little bit. So, you know, and everybody's doing all this no-gi. So I reached out to one of my neighbors who follows, you know, Power Athlete.
Okay.
He was the heavyweight wrestler at Cornell when they were top five school, played football. And then he also wrestled at Hofstra, my buddy Matt Pollock. And so I hit up Matt, and he like literally lives around the corner from us. He's still like 6'2", 260. And they brought him in to work with who's the big wrestler guy from the big black wrestler dude, massive 400-pounder, Mark Henry.
Oh, Mark Henry.
Oh,
so
WWE.
They brought him in to
Lake
work
Charles.
Oh, that wrestler.
So they brought him in to work with Mark Henry's son. So he's been working with 3F.
Oh, yeah.
So Mark Henry's son's like 14 and benches like fucking 600 pounds.
I remember reading about Mark Henry when he was 16 years old.
So I brought Pollock in. So I hit up Matt and I was like, hey, Matt, can you come teach some wrestling? And so we went up to one of the wrestling deals that they were doing up at Six Blades. And so we just walked in off the street and like Matt, I'm like, hey, this is my buddy. He used to wrestle. He absolutely fucking was murdering people to the point where they were like, I was like, dude, he was the heavyweight at Cornell. They were top five school. And then he went to Hofstra, was his top five.
Yeah, sandbag. Don't, yeah, give, Matt's don't a give him anything.
Savage, right? Well, one, he's Polish,
yeah,
which, you know, instantly means he comes with pierogies and a good attitude. And, you know, I played with a lot of fucking skis and a lot of Polacks.
Yeah.
And I fucking love them. I'm like, dude, I'm like, they're my people. But so Matt's become my training partner, but an absolute fucking stud. And like, I just realized that wrestlers are just wired up different. One,
yeah,
they're usually always good dudes. And so he and then also, you know, Matt was a
fucking humbled.
He was Chris Wiedemann's training partner when they were at Hofstra. Okay. So he's already a fucking savage.
So here's a question to pose. Did the sport teach the lesson, or did these kids that were wired for it find the sport?
You have the spark. And the problem is when you put them in that crucible of wrestling, because here's the deal. There's a wrestling, there's a real high-end wrestling program in Austin. It's called 3F, and Matt goes and coaches there. And the hilarious part is, on Sundays, the reason that all these dads coach and all these guys that are high-end wrestlers is because they show up and they still get to try to fuck each other up on in wrestling practice. But the kids, so I try to get Cashy in, but he's too young. They don't want him until they're about 8 or 9. So we put him in BJJ, and all the younger kids are in BJJ programs, and about 8 or 9 they go to wrestling.
I always wonder about that, because BJJ, you're on your back.
Yeah.
And that's the last place
you ever want to be in football.
Yeah, or so, in wrestling, yeah.
Well, but
or
that's football. The hard part about playing, coming from football. When I went to BJJ, the fact that, like, and you know this from football, if I end up on my back with you on top of me, everything has gone wrong. Every ounce of me is fucking screaming, what the fuck, I failed. And this is the position I start in. So it is the most humbling thing I've had to do. And 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week, I got to go get choked out by some fucking dad with a fucking man bun.
You don't have to. You choose to.
I choose to. And it's humbling. So when I go up to Six Blades, my training partner is this guy named Don. And Don's about like a fucking 14-year purple belt. And he's got a man bun. And he chokes me out. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man bun.
How much does he weigh?
6'3", 260.
Oh, so he's a big
dude. So what's hilarious is because I think big dudes gravitate towards big dudes. So now all the Six Blades, which is in Austin.
You guys got the heavyweights?
Dude. We have a heavyweight
class.
That's
his favorite movie.
There's a guy that's 6'11", 320.
Yeah. Lunch is canceled due to lack of hustle.
So there's a guy that's 6'11", 320 that shows up.
Oh my God.
He's fucking massive. So like, there's all these 300-pounders. So I'm like, God damn it. We need to get all these guys on a fucking diet so we can fucking win some fights. Yeah.
Well, that's where you come in, and give them free advice.
Yeah.
But I need your answer.
The spark? You talking about that?
Yeah. Did the wrestling teach the lesson, or did the kids find wrestling that unlocked their potential, their spark?
Let's put it this way. The guys that are at the high end, they had it, and then they developed more of it. I don't care what sport you're talking about, soccer, football. If you're at the top, you've had both.
No, so, I mean, there's something, Jim can talk on this too, like whether it be the dude that wants to ride fucking 1,200 pounds into the hole on a fucking squat, or play college football, a professional. Like, there has to be something a little bit different than those individuals. Then all of a sudden you take that. Because here's the deal, like, everybody has the same opportunity, right? We talk about equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome.
Not everyone.
You have to have a certain level of mental, emotional, and genetic ability, and, like, you know, genetics, geography, and opportunity.
I'm in the camp that coaches teach lessons, not sports. Where you're playing football with quality coaches, they teach you the lessons.
Yeah. But here's the deal. The reason I got to play in the NFL wasn't because I had quality coaches, because I was fucking 6'6". Right. And I had a high school coach that fucking hated me. And I fucking succeeded in spite of that little motherfucker.
But then there's other stories where people succeeded in spite, not despite their coaches.
I know people that had amazing relationships with their coaches and succeeded because they wanted to be better versions. I'm the motherfucker that's like going to succeed in spite of fucking you.
Listen, I think the one thing, and I remember just reading all this stuff, and we kind of hinted at this before, but there's a difference between what, like, the guys at the top. I'm not concerned with those guys at the top because I don't coach those guys. And like, the easiest strength coach in the job is like Alabama. Like, the third, like, when a guy goes down, like, oh my God, he's like, well, who's got his backups? And the backup's backup? Well, his five string.
The backup's backup's getting fucking drafted in the third round.
Yeah. So I always see, like, my greatest things are when I have a kid who doesn't have that spark, and we develop it and develop it. And I've seen that, and they're not going to go play college football or anything, but all of a sudden they're all conference. They have, four or five pancakes every game. They got, they weigh 205 pounds. They don't have much athletic ability. And all of a sudden we tap into
Maisuma?
That. And I think that can be.
Bartender. Maisuma?
Garçon.
No, I'm sorry. That's Portuguese. Maisuma. One more.
I think we look at those like, I look at that two different ways. And I think we only really, in America, everywhere, we focus on the superstars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's great and everything. And but I see it like you can develop that even if they don't have it, but they have to want it.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. And I always tell the kids, like, I can't be the guy in the weight room that wants to get stronger. Like, I can't be want it more than you. Like, I can't want to play more than you. You guys are going to have to want it more than me. And I'm like, I will go with you guys. I will do everything can to do
you've
this.
You've heard me say this.
But I can't do this for you, shit. And I tell them all the time, like, dude, when you guys leave, I got another crew coming in.
Dude, but how hard is it when you want it more than they do? And, like, this makes me sick where, like, I'm like, I want you to stand in the sun.
Yeah.
Like I don't want yeah. I want you to feel the sun warm your face. I want you to stand in there. I was there for fucking 10 years. I want you to have that feeling. If I want it more than you, that's a fucking problem.
Yeah. And
you know what? And that's what fucking, like, a little piece of me dies when I want it more than you.
And, there's other things that in high school especially is they don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing because I don't know how you're going to have to put them in the fucking fire, And the
you
problem
don't
is
do them any favors by fucking going easy on them.
No. And so that's why when
thank
we.
Thank you.
But anyway, the Margarita. Yeah. So that's what I would think. And
did you hear the disdain in Margarita?
Margarita. Fucking
you're a fucking margarita guy. He's like, it's all right. I'm totally fine with it.
That's right. Hey, whatever you need, man.
Can I get double the fruit this time?
Can you get a splash of grenadine in there?
It's delicious.
Just real quick, I remember when I was in probably a sophomore in high school, they were talking about how Olympic lifters in the Olympics had like the fastest 10-yard sprint minus the sprinters.
Sure.
And they're like, well, and then everyone's like, well, it's because they do the clean and jerk and the snatch. I'm like, do you really think that's why they're good at that? Or maybe because they're good at that.
Do you think that they're really fast so they were able to do the clean? Yeah.
And I was like, you can't tell me, like, I'm going to take an average kid who, runs a 10.040 that you can do some power cleans and I'm always going to be
well
super
I mean
fast.
So Travis Mash has done I fucking love Travis Mash and he tags me and all this shit. Oh dude, the stuff that he's doing with these kids, he just had some like freshman kid at some Division III school just basically clean and like I don't think he jerked it but he cleaned like 440.
Oh my god.
So he finds these kids and I was on the podcast with him and I'm like, dude, I'm such a fan of what he does. The fact that he's able, I mean, and I really think if you give him another 10 years, gold medals in the Olympics. So there are phenomenal athletes that don't get into the snatch, clean, and jerk because they're going to fucking make money. I told you the guy's story, Boomer Grigsby, who was our fullback linebacker at the Chiefs.
He played
in
both?
He was our – yeah, he started as a
linebacker.
Okay.
And then they moved him to fullback.
Oh, my God.
So we were in the weight room one day, and he had cleats on because I remember they were spatted. He came in right after, and we were doing cleans and, like, deadlifts and shit. I watched him basically reverse curl 405 and push press it with cleats on a wooden surface.
Yep.
And then basically brought it down and set it very gently on the ground. And he's like, what do you think? I'm like, I just think you set the fucking American record. I mean, dude, there are guys out there that are absolute genetic freaks that Travis is finding that are guys that like aren't necessarily the most genetic freaks. And they're guys that are fucking clean at 440, 445. I mean, I love it, dude. Every time I see Travis's thing come up on social or he tags me in something, I get so excited. One, because I love to see, and dude, this is where I realized for a long time I didn't think I was a fan of humanity, but I really do. I want to see people stand on the biggest stage. I want to see them compete against the biggest, and I want to see people at their fucking greatest, and I want to see athletes that work hard fucking perform.
Yeah. Like we had a we hold on, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go.
No, a question for you after yeah. this. Go
ahead. We had a kid who's you know super great kid, and I'm with all the physical attributes you would want. He ended up getting a scholarship to a smaller school, nice. But his junior year, I mean, I'm talking fucking hard work. Just a good kid, works his ass off. And he knows how to keep his mouth shut. That's why I like him.
Like, there's, well, yeah, but he's, you know, I wish like, I learned that earlier yeah. on.
But I watched him his junior year, and I'm like, he's got all this strength, all this speed, all this power, and he just didn't know how to play football. Mm. And his senior year, all of a sudden, he starts like, you know, putting his helmet through fucking sternums, and yeah. like he's discovered himself. And every before it, he had 100 yards rushing in one of our playoff games in the first quarter. Just like,
awesome. I love and, it. Fucking
and,
love it.
And so every before every game, I would walk up to him, grab him by the helmet, and say, "No arm tackles." I'm like, "No arm tackles, coach," because that's like,
yeah.
we're not always fast enough to break, but we can go through arms. But anyway, that was you know, he had all this stuff, and he just needed like learn how to do all that.
Well, you know what he needed? Not he just needed mentorship. So this is something that I didn't realize, because a lot of times
you talk like, about from a mentorship from a player.
Well, like, no, like so. I didn't get this from a coach until I got older. I got it from my older brother. So my brother Eddie is by far my greatest coach and my fucking greatest teacher and my greatest mentor. But I realized working with Victor and Rush and these kids with these BJJ guys, because you know we had you know we owned a commercial gym, across the football. We traveled. We taught fucking hundreds of seminars. We did this and programming. We'd kind of been removed and sort of kind of mentoring coaches and trying to influence yeah. people. And this deal came up with working with you know Shondi's guys and Victor and them. And I really realized that there was like a connection with like a coach and athlete. Where like the mentorship and taking them out and creating relationship and seeing them blossom and like seeing Arash like grow into who he is and Victor and Philippe, I feel like I'm raising like my own kids
well,
in a little
it's,
way.
It's interesting.
And like it's yeah. it, like and you've invested in them, and so like when they go out and like you know they're going to fight this weekend at the Dallas Open, like not only do I like I want them to update on me, but I know that they need me in their corner. And like part of the thing is we train like we're their boys like in this situation. And I realized that there's like an interesting mentorship thing that I kind of missed out on a lot of times because I was kind of like, fuck these people. I'll do it myself. And I really think that there's like, you know, the you know, like whether it be George Zangis or whoever it was that mentored me, like there's a very real thing. And I think what Jim has done is tremendous. Like when I hear you talk about these kids, I'm like, God, what a fucking amazing opportunity these kids have had. And then when you're like, hey, you know what? I'm going to get a D1 coaching job at maybe Ohio State and I'll call you Wellborn and we'll fucking do this together. Yeah. You know, which might happen, fucking call Jim. Oh, but, you know, like that type of thing of being
able to. I got to get my CSCS.
Ah, fuck that. You don't need that joking. Shit. We'll call Mad Dog and we'll send him a whole bunch of Krispy Kremes.
Oh, I got it.
Whoa.
I retract my statement. I actually have a professional relationship with him, but yeah we got you. But building off that, for my original question, like I'm still coaching high school lacrosse, so there are kids that are doing the
are
right things.
Are you coaching on the field, or are you strength coaching?
Both.
Okay.
So, I
hear it every single day. I fucking love it.
Unique opportunity. We don't have a weight room, so we do manual resistance. Yep. We own the dynamic warm up. 24 minutes of a 2-hour practice is general physical preparedness. And the challenge is there's kids that are doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. They are quiet leaders.
Yep.
So then there are people that are not as invested. So now, you know, I want it for the kids to find their voice and call the kids out and just take ownership of the team. And it's so challenging.
Dude, you're going to laugh at this. So he tells me today the kids found out that the final four same as the prom.
Well, we got to edit that out.
No, we're not going to edit that. It's just it's an interesting deal because now these kids have to decide if they want to be great at lacrosse or great at
the
prom.
Kids that are doing the right thing that haven't yet found their voice, where is the push? Like, what is the direction that you're providing for those guys that lead by example but haven't yet found the voice?
The one thing I struggle with that because maybe the last year or so of college and definitely all through high school, I was a leader, but I didn't really know how to vocally lead. Like I see we've had kids, even the quiet kids who knew how to vocally lead without really saying much, But those are unique characters. And I don't know, we talk about whether or not you're born with that. And I think some of it is, like, some kids just gravitate. I can talk about this because I don't know how to do that other than putting them in charge of stuff.
Yeah.
And I always start with putting them in charge of when we do our jumps, we have groups. And the first group that goes, we do three lines, we call it, is always seniors or someone, you know, within that range. And we always making sure we land in strong in every rep. And I said, it's your job, every guy on your line, if they're not landing strong, they got to go back and do it. So it's shit like that. Like, it's not really like a huge responsibility, but now they're in charge of those kids. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I try to give them things that are easy to do. Just like my son and like doing his morning routine. Like, we're not asking you to go make $1 million, but you got to have your teeth brushed. You got to have this. Yeah. Like, this is all we're asking you to do.
Dude.
And that's it.
I deal with this every single day, harping on my kids on the importance of brushing their teeth and having a morning and evening routine. It's like, and to the point where, like, I hug my kids.
You know what I do?
Every night and every morning, and I smell.
Yeah.
You didn't brush your fucking teeth. Go brush your teeth.
The one thing that I've done is I take a piece of computer paper. This is for the kids. I write down all the things that he has to do, and I put a little square. I do it to myself every day. You know, just a checklist, and there's like five things on there. And he's so excited when he gets to check. Just like you are when you have your goals, you know, your daily shit, and you cannot wait to make the little X. I found that has been the most more motivating for anything. But anyway, I don't know how to do that because I think some kids, they don't have it in them. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
But why is that? So, like, I have this firm belief.
Because there's introverts and extroverts, and some of them.
No, but like, I think kids, and maybe boys, maybe different than girls, I really honestly think, and this is like where I get into this like division of boys and girls. I really think that boys want to live up to something bigger than themselves. Yeah. And I think girls want approval. So, like, I think with my daughters, like, I got to hold them to a high standard because they need approval. But I think for my son, being around bigger than life, absolute fucking stars is big because, like when we go to BJJ, part of that, or like when we train and all this stuff, like, I want my son to know, think about, like,
of what can be done.
Like when we had the symposium and it's like K-Star and Chris Duffin and Woodski and this. And like, I'm like, you know, talking to him about, you know, daddy's friends as we're sitting there drinking coffee in the morning. And I'm like, you realize the one dude deadlifted like 1,000 pounds, squatted 1,000 and did this. Yeah. This guy competed in the Olympics. I mean, you know, these guys are the best to ever do their job, and being able to like have that. The picture I have of Cashy fighting Rudy Reyes on the floor of my kitchen, and you know, Rudy, his, you know, military guy, you know, is on the, what is it? His new show is
Special Forces.
This, I mean,
Rudy's Who Dares a, wins
yeah,
for...
fucking amazing individual. One of the best people. And he's over there wrestling with my son, trying to teach him choke moves. And, you know, and like, dude, like that's the memories I want him to have. But I think as a boy, you grow up with these larger than life images, just something to attain.
What's the superhero thing?
Yeah.
Or the myths that, you know, we tell kids that are,
It's the same reason that the Vikings would tell their kids about Odin and Thor and this, because they needed these.
Of Ragnar, that was a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Different accomplishments all made into one.
Ragnar Lothbrok.
Yeah, like, I'm not talking about the show. I'm talking, at least that's what I was reading. But it's like,
so
let's just all combine all the cool things into one.
We fucking watched the show, and then I went back and did like a historical deep dive into you know, and it's probably like the accumulation of 10 different dudes, but fucking savage.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, but that's now those, you know. There's very little, obviously they didn't have like a written language.
Yeah. It's all folklore.
Yeah.
And storytelling.
But that's important. And,
I
can go culturally how important it is to have, not forget your culture either.
Yeah.
And, the older I get, the more I realize the guys, the American Revolution, the most badass motherfuckers alive, they had a pitchfork and that's against the greatest army in the world. And they're
You're gonna laugh at this. So I bought my kids, in that movie or in that TV show, they're wearing the Thor's hammer, and so I bought my kids those and gave them to them because our heritage is from there, from Denmark.
The things I say to my son when he's lifting,
Yeah, so I mean, legitimately,
we're from Germany, so yeah. We talk about the Germanic hordes, and I'm like, God damn it, you honor your fucking ancestors right now. You give me fucking effort. Yeah. Do it now,
dude. Our family's from Denmark, dude. Like that's our deal. Yeah. And so, like I gifted those to my kids, and we watched that. I'm like, this is where you come from, and you know what? Kindness, gentleness, and fucking warmth is not part of where these people are from. So go out there and like we watched it, dude. And I really think like we come from a fucking hardy people and they have to remember this. But there's also an interesting research piece that I read years ago where women who raise their sons and their daughters, like let's say their husband was a piece of shit and ran away, but the mothers didn't rat fuck the father and actually told like almost lies, like your father died in war.
Yeah, in the water boy.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like the water, like, yeah, same deal. Those children grew up to be uber successful, like the Bill Clintons, like pulled themselves up by the bootstraps. It was actually Bill Clinton. Yeah, what was the deal?
So I did not know that.
His father was a piece of shit, single mother.
Now we know. Now that makes sense. A lot of this stuff makes sense.
For all of his idiosyncrasies and other issues, he did grow up to be president.
He's a child fucker.
Yeah, he's a fucking bad dude. But think about this, right? Like it was more beneficial for the mother to raise the child with this vision of the father who was a war hero, died in Vietnam, than he was some deadbeat that ran away. Yeah, and so kids will grow, or so the sons will grow up trying to emulate the vision of their father, which will make them more successful than the mother fucking rat fucking the father. So, like, dude, like, I'm telling you, like, when you raise your kids, you have to talk to them about, you know, you're part of a greater lineage and this is what's expected of you. And so I tell my daughters all the time, I'm like, where the fuck are you going to meet a 6'6" white professional athlete who graduated with a rhetoric degree in Berkeley and multiple degrees? Well, I'm like, you have to meet somebody
University
better
of
than
Texas, because they are spinning
first of all,
them out.
Yeah, I went to a small, very conservative school in Northern California, UC Berkeley. But like, you know, think about like what they have to grow up with. Like, that's a fucking tall order, and I want them to have that tall order.
Pun intended.
Yeah.
You just hope that they do.
They will. Well, do you know why? My wife is short. She's like 5'1", 5'2", and she dislikes short people. So she's very she's what I like.
Do not bring anyone here.
Yeah, she's a heightist. She totally is. I'm like, you're the shortest person here. She's like, yeah. You think I'm happy about this? I don't like short people. So she's the heightist. You didn't know that about Kate?
I felt it.
Felt the disdain.
Yeah, she's
how
like,
how tall are you?
Oh, boot height or high school football
height.
Program height?
No. Yeah.
5'10",
yeah,
high school football
gym
program?
Gym 6 feet, boot height, high school program.
Yeah, I was, I'm five, always been 5'10". I feel like I came out of the fucking womb this way. You want to hear an awesome story is generally we're bigger and stronger than most teams.
Shocker.
And we're out in the field doing our warm up, and I heard the other coach yell, "They're not as big as they look." And I was like, "That doesn't make." We were left pissing our pants, like, "Yeah, they're exactly
they're not
what they
as
are.
Big as they look." So well, no, we're exactly as big as we look.
But you know how we talk about the high school football thing. Our head coach does everything backwards. So if you're 6'2", 265, you're now 5'11", 220. Oh, and so then our kids come out and they're just, you know, our big kid. It's like, holy shit, I thought we
That's a good move.
Yeah, like, no, just make everybody 5'6", fucking 125. Yeah.
And but I remember in high school I was 5'11", 205 or something. I was 5'10", 190 or something. I remember that the coach who did all this stuff was he's the one that gifted me all the Husker stuff. Cause he was, I mean, you couldn't, this guy bled more red. He'd go every year to the big conference and stuff. And he'd bring me back a bunch of goodie bags. And of course, back in the day, especially in Nebraska, the hat that you got me, you know, had like the braided string there. It was about 12 feet high.
Yeah, with a big N on it.
Yeah, that's right. Great. You know, I can, but anyway.
God damn it. Now you make me feel like.
You should have went to Nebraska, my friend.
Dude.
We could have been friends.
My father.
Did they have rhetoric, John?
No. So here was a big problem, right? So like, just to give you a little history on me. I never thought I was going to play in the NFL. And my dad.
I know why you chose.
No, I mean,
it's
like,
a legit
I remember when I started getting like scholarship offers, my dad was like, wait a minute, they're going to pay you to go to college? So my dad graduated high school like 16. Mm-hmm. He was super smart, graduated high school or college at 19, graduated law school in his 20s, and was like, worked.
Kansas, where do you go to college?
So my dad, born in Kansas, World War II started, my grandfather and all of his brothers were engineers. And all of a sudden it was like, hey, come out to the war effort. So they drove from Kansas to California and they got jobs building airplanes in the McDonnell Douglas plant in LA. So my dad shows up 6 years old, 5 years old. And he grew up in Culver City. My dad's my dad's super smart.
Yeah, that's
like, the original like 160 IQ smart. Photographic memory smart. So graduates high school early, goes to college, graduates law school. So education was always very important in my family, and not to be a fucking dummy. So when I told my dad I wanted to lift weights, you know what his first comment was? Why are you going to lift weights? It's counting to 10 over and over again. A bunch of morons do that. And I was like, no, Dad, this is important.
Pick it up, put it down, pick it up.
Right? Yeah. So I told my dad it was important, and he supported me, even though he didn't like it. And then I remember when all of a sudden, like, I started getting good at this football thing and lifting weights.
He's like, yeah, you're getting free college.
He was like, holy shit, you're going to get free college.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And so when I went and took, I went to SC, UCLA, Colorado, Nebraska. And I remember when I came home, I was like, fucking Nebraska is fucking awesome. And, Colorado was a little iffy.
How was CU at that time? I don't remember.
Was that
Cordell Stewart?
Yeah. And the religious dude, Mike.
No, McCarthy.
Yeah, McCarthy.
And, what's his name? Bill McCartney?
Yeah.
So Donnie Mabe was there.
Yeah,
he was super. And then brought Fred Hatfield out.
But no, it was Doc Kreese.
Doc Kreese was the strength coach.
Donnie Mabe.
Yeah. So Doc Kreese was the strength coach, and he and Zangus were friends, so I knew Doc Kreese. And then I went to Cal, and then UCLA was Terry Donahue, and then it was John Robinson at USC. So, like, I'm in this, and I'm getting recruited by all these schools. And I remember, I went to the Nebraska trip. They flew me on my own little plane, and there was a fucking N on, like, a cornfield. We landed. We went to the Elks Club. We had crack crab and lobster. And these guys
were
like –
Were you the only recruit, or was it like a, hey, this is recruit weekend?
No, I was the only recruit that weekend. So, like, I had, like, Joel Wilkes, and I can't remember who my – Joel Wilkes was one of the hosts, and then the other guy was Brandon Stye.
Oh.
So Brandon Stye was the guard. Joel Wilkes was the other guard.
Was there a game or was it just
No, they were training for the bowl game. Okay. And so Will Shields was there. I met Will.
What year was this?
He was 94. It was 94.
Was it the 94 season?
It was 93, 94. It was the end of 93. It was 93 going into 94. Because I graduated high school. I'm sorry. I graduated high school in 94. So this would have been 93 going into 94.
All right, so they didn't win the national championship. It was the next year.
They played in the national championship.
Yeah, and they lost to – I don't know if they did. 94 they won, 95 they won, 97 they won.
Yeah, so this would have been 93. They were in the bowl.
Season. Yeah,
and so it was Brandon Stye, who was from Orange County, was my host, Joel Wilkes, and then it was Zanica.
Zanica, yeah.
Yeah, and so literally it was me and these fucking massive mutants. And it was fucking great. And I remember I came home and I told my dad, I'm like, man, Nebraska's pretty dope. And you know what he said to me? At the end of the day, football aside, what degree do you want to hang on your wall? And I was like,
football,
the shield.
Well, it's a big problem, right? And I was like, you know, because like at the end of the day, like my dad, like, so I joke with these guys, like, you guys didn't grow up with a dad with 160 plus IQ who was not only very intelligent, but extremely condescending and a 50 year trial attorney. So that's why you guys always think I'm a fucking smart ass. Well, yeah, I had a dad who was fucking smart ass. Well, you met my dad.
Yeah, he's a great man.
Yeah, he's a fucking asshole.
Power Athlete Radio episode number 300.
Yeah. And then my dad like tortures me that the fact that I didn't send him a itemized list of questions to answer ahead of time. But
I gotta know what I'm stepping into.
Yeah. So
what's a podcast?
Yeah, serious. But that was a big deal for me. And I remember telling my dad, being like, you know, like, I don't know if you're gonna play pro football. It's not really a deal. Like, what degree do you want to hang on your wall? And for me, that was Cal. You know, Berkeley at the time, like, to be able to have a degree from Cal Berkeley, because I didn't think I was going to play in the NFL. If I knew I was going to play a decade in the NFL, I would have probably made a different decision.
So, genuine question. Growing up in Texas, it's Texas and Texas A&M. In California growing up, like, what is
So where I grew up in Southern California, no, it's USC, UCLA. Okay. Yeah. So my dad went to USC law school, so he was a fucking Trojan. And we had a ton of neighbors that were UCLA people. So every year it was flags, SC, UCLA. And you know what my dad told me? Because I got recruited to go play. John Robinson said, I want you to play for USC. You're going to be a son of Troy. And you know what my dad told me? Don't be a fucking SC stooge. You know how much I fucking hate these people with their collared shirts and their BMWs and their license plate frames. Fuck those people. And my dad hated the USC fucking culture. Mm-hmm. And then you know what his funny joke was about UCLA? Could you really go play with those powder blue uniforms?
Well, I could. That was my number one.
Those.
And they still look horrible.
Those douchey gold helmets and powder blue uniforms. And I was like, you're right, Dad. And you know what? It was Berkeley. And I remember my dad. So my next door neighbor when we were growing up was a guy named Lynn Wilson. He was an orthopedic surgeon. And Lynn Wilson, when I broke my collarbone when I was about 4 years old, actually said it in his kitchen. And Lynn was extremely intelligent. And my dad always said Lynn Wilson was the smartest person he'd ever met. And where did Lynn Wilson go to college?
Cal.
UC Berkeley.
Oh.
Yeah, went to Cal.
Cal Berkeley.
And got his went to undergrad.
Have you been to Cal Berkeley in the last 5 years?
Uh-huh.
How is it there?
I just go to the football stadium.
Dude, another great story, though. When we went up to visit in the roundabout tour they gave.
Yeah.
And your donation.
Yeah, so I donated money. While I was a
Here's a donation.
I donated. So as a football player, I donated money to build, like they wanted to build a new locker room. Okay. And so one of the deals was, I think it was like 30 G's, and you pay and like you get your name on a locker. So like Chris and I go up, we reach out to Dave Ortega, and we get the whole tour, and I want to see, you know, my locker, right, where I got fucking donated. Yeah. So they take us on this fucking long tour.
Oh, no.
Like, it was really long. And all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, I really appreciate all this. This is all great. But, like, let me see my fucking locker.
Oh, no.
And they're like, we go into the locker room, and they're like, yeah, we can't find your locker. And I was like, that's a real fucking problem. I mean, that's what we call fraud. So what had happened was, as they were building the locker room, Aaron Rodgers came in and wrote a big check. And things kind of rigor removed or whatever. And so they were like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a locker, and then we're going to put your name outside on the wall. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, this is kind of shitty, but what were we going to do with it? So then what I did is, to make sure that this happened, I was like, all right, we're going to a game. And I fucking told them what game I was coming to. And I was like, yo, I better show up and I better see my name on the fucking deal, because I'm going to bring my kids. So I showed up with my wife and kids, and they actually had my name on the wall and the whole deal. So they made good on it, but it was a bad deal.
Yeah. I just recall, like, at the moment in time, this phrase that I've never heard before, John called tip a cow. So his dad made sure that he donated to give back to his school.
Yeah.
And John just assumed that they made do on their promise. And we were actually there in person.
Yeah, we showed up to fucking do a little QC, little quality control.
Tip of Cal. It's
trust.
They didn't
trust
execute.
But verify.
Yeah. So we had a deal at Cal, and this is really shitty. I went to Berkeley for the education. I went to Berkeley, and like I think back on this, and like at 18 years old, you know, all I ever wanted to be was my father's son.
Yeah,
that was it. Like, I you know, and I tear up, like, you know, he's been gone 4 years. But, like, when I think about this, like, I just wanted to be my father's son. I wanted my dad to be proud of me, and I did things so that he would be proud of me.
Yes.
And, like, right or wrong, that was how we rolled. And I like, loved my dad. I still love him. And I respected the shit out of him. I learned hard work, work ethic. Everything good I learned in this world, I learned from my parents and playing football. And, you know, every day that goes by, I like look at my dad's number on my phone, and I want to call him.
I wish you could give him a ring.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, going to Cal was something where he wanted me to go and learn and mix it up with the smartest people to be able to provide an opportunity for me to fucking show that I'm smart. And, you know, like, the thing that kills me is people are like, oh, NFL players, and like they shit on me constantly for the, you know, or this discounting of the fact that I played in the NFL or whatever, and big dude lifts weights. But at the end of the day, I like to think in a battle of wits, or when it comes down to it, I'll fucking tear anybody up. Yeah. And that was important for my father. He was training us, you know, my brother Ed's a trial attorney. He trained us to literally stand on that stage and be trial attorneys. And so part of the deal with going to playing football is like, hey, you're going to use this football chance to go and go to the, one of the best schools in the world. That's what you're going to do. And then what's crazy is then I went and I was pretty good. And all of a sudden, like once I went to the NFL and I got drafted, I literally every game he could come to, I brought him to.
Yeah.
He saw almost every single one of my games. And I remember him being like, you went to Cal because I thought you were going to get a good degree. Like, I had no idea. Like, it was just such an interesting reversal, and I was so proud that he was there. But at the end of the day, like, the fact that I got to go there and not only play football and sharpen my fucking blade so that, like, now in the world, like, you know, I played football in the NFL, and that's a great trump card. But when I battle people, they instantly discount it. But you know what? The thing they can't discount is the intellect and my ability to fucking tear them up.
Who was your coach?
I know. You said so I got recruited by a guy named Keith Gilbertson, and then Mariucci was there, and then Tom Homo.
Gilbertson? How do I know that name?
He was the offensive coordinator for Washington.
Okay.
With Edmund and those guys when they won a national championship.
Okay.
So, Jim, we got to wind it down here.
Yes, sir.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Yes, sir.
Football, fathers, leadership, mentorship. So is there anything that in the past year since we've last conversed that you want to leave with the listeners that you've grown, developed, and discovered coaching?
Coaching. I'm the one – every year I feel like I never learn anything else. You know, when you kind of – and then I realized about 3 weeks into the thing – training or something or off season, I'm like, how much I've learned and how much I have to learn. Like, I realize how dumb I am all the time. It's a constant humbling thing for me. So that's like just from a like anything, like just coaching, like the better I've gotten, the worse I realize I am. Do you know what I'm saying?
God, yeah. Is
and I feel like I there's some days I walk out of that weight room and it's happened. I feel like, holy shit, you know what? The greatest fucking thing. And then another day I'm like, you know, I don't know if I know anything.
Isn't it crazy the older you get? Like, it's almost like I laughed at the fact that you wrote your 5-3-1 book when you did, because I have a feeling if you wrote it today, you're like, I couldn't write this book, I'm a fucking moron.
No, well, that's the other thing. I had the younger I am, the more bravado I had.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. That's why they send those kids to war.
Yeah.
Because we're, you know, I'm serious.
No,
you
know,
if back when the Normandy, almost all the kids that were on that first wave never 18. Been to battle.
Yeah, they fucking.
Because they knew, because everyone who had been in battle, like, dude, fuck that shit.
They were going to drop those things. They had to send those kids out.
And, but I, and I always, you know, I did, like this year, we had another good year, but we always had these massive, we had some challenges, like right in the beginning of the year. I mean, serious, just.
Dude, I told you, man. If you ever need my help, dude, I'm a phone call away. All you gotta do is text me.
No,
and you don't even have to text me. Your wife has to text me.
Yes,
I'll fucking come out and help.
I never. But it just it's always.
You guys
amazing.
Know Jim doesn't refer to phone calls or texts.
No, I refuse to do any of that stuff.
Yeah, fuck that.
But I'm always like, because we did good work, I have faith that things are going to work out, and I think. It doesn't mean you're going to go win the national or the, you know, high school championship or whatever. But if you put in the work, at some point, like, things come together. And,
so the saying goes, if you work hard, good things happen.
Well, what's fucked up is we lost our first two games, and one of the teams that we lost to, I got to tell you a quick story. One of the teams we lost to, we ended up playing in the second round of the playoffs, running clock. Means we were ahead by 30 or more. I think we won by 45 fucking points or something like that. So the team we lost to, we beat the shit out. Now, that team that we lost to, they had a kid. I'm not going to – he's a tremendous athlete. He was going to a major SEC school. Let's put it that way. And you watch him play and you're like, holy shit. Like, you can see it.
Yeah.
Not even close to being the best player on that team. Best player on that team was this 5'10 linebacker, about 195 pounds. CTE never even occurred to him. I've never seen a
kid. That was his nickname with CTE?
Yeah. He played running back and linebacker, and he fucking ruined people. And I've never seen a kid play that hard with a motor like that in a long – now, there's kids like you're like, dude, that kid's scrappy. This kid was fucked up. Like, break your fucking knees and, like, fucking choke you out and just – and I remember thinking, how far – this kid's not going to get any offers. And I understand. I mean, he's not the biggest. Yeah. But I couldn't believe – like, that's what I love about high school football. And even in college, like, you still have room for that fucking dude who's just like, you know what? I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And
that ended that, in the NFL with Zach Thomas.
Yeah, but there's
– we ain't seen it since.
It's just, you know, and
Larry
the way that the football has gotten and is big and is – you know, we evolve. But it's still like high school. I still feel like has that ability for kids who like, listen, I'm not this, that, but you know what? I'll fucking put my helmet down.
It's my time.
Yeah. And I always tell this kids, like, we can out-bully the other team. That's what we have. We have the ability. You have the ability to change right now in this training. This is something that you can control. We can't control how tall you get or your genetics or anything like that, but we can control how hard you work, and you can control how much effort you give, and you can control how much you fucking want to kill someone. And the kids just sit there. I'm like, you think I'm fucking with you, don't you? Like, we're going to – and I won't even say half the stuff I say to them because I'm probably getting in trouble. But
I am incredibly – If you had, like, a personal mantra or, like, a one-liner that you tell those kids, like, it's the age-old, like, fucking, we're going to show up and fucking kill everybody, what would it be?
Oh, man. I do a pregame speech every game. And I write it out.
It's awesome.
And it's about 45 seconds, and I prepare everything for about a week. And I just like, and I don't, it's hard because it, sometimes it comes to me like in the last day or something. But the one thing, I'll give you a couple examples because I can't say one thing. One thing is we always tell the O-line, they're going to fucking break. They might stop us maybe the first quarter, second quarter, but I guarantee you, we're going to have 350 yards rushing today. It's going to come. So just trust in me. Number two is I want bodies. And I say we play to the echo of the whistle. You ever hear that? Mm-hmm. You know what that means?
Well, I just got chills.
Yeah, we play to the echo of the whistle. And yeah. I there's a couple kids. I'll never forget this. We had some kids who just has the most pins in college wrestling right now as a freshman. I said, listen, if shit goes wrong, it's on you. All right, you're going to – and I'm like, 15 yards is okay. All right, so we cool with that? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, but not you. And I looked at one of the other kids. He's like, why not me? He's like, because he does fucking damage.
Yeah.
You know? But the point being is, like, that's what we want to do. And you can manipulate and change your circumstances just by sheer will of effort and hatred, really. And I shouldn't say hatred, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I fucking – believe me, I got a lot of hate.
Because I wrote something about this, like someone said, you know, you shouldn't live with anger and stuff like that. And I said, listen, if that was true, I would have overtrained my first 6 months of training. You just have to learn how to control that anger and all that hate. And I told my wife this a long time ago, and I don't know why, because I grew up in a very nice suburban home. I have two great parents. I didn't get abused or anything. Like, I was so fucking angry all the time. Now, I kept it in. I didn't go, you know, beat people up or anything, but I've never, like, I'm so happy I don't have that anger, but that thing fueled me for all through football and all through high school, or, you know, through college and even through lifting to a certain degree. And I wish these kids would, like, and I think part of it, like, they're just pushing these kids down, these young men, like, don't you know, don't be rough, don't be this and that. And I see it with my young son. We fucking homeschooled him because I picked him up one day from school. I just watched his soul die every morning, you know, every afternoon. And I'm like, dude, this is not acceptable to me. So we homeschooled him for 3 years because I'm like, I'm not sending my, I don't know, how old is kindergarten? I don't know what age it is.
Five.
So, yeah, I remember picking up, he just looked like he was just done. And I know that kid. He's fucking, and he's an animal. Like, yeah. He's nuts. So, I know, I just want to kind of, I see a lot of myself in some of these kids. I mean, obviously some are much better athletes. Some are not even close to being very good. But I'm like, man, you have the ability to make a change in what the outcome here. And you have the ability to give the effort in the weight room and the running and stuff. And I always tell the kids, I said, listen, I can't control how fast you guys run on the field in conditioning. But if you haven't seen the field, you can give more effort than the guys who were starting last year, and it's going to give you a shot. But I can't, like I said, I can't run this shit for you, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I always prepare something. Man, I wish I'm sure I have some notes laying around. But, you know, the other thing listen, it basically comes down to if you want something done, you have to take it. That's the massive G version. Okay. If we want something to happen, we have to go out and take it. And I can't say what I said.
My deal is,
but does that make sense?
If you're like, gonna want it, if you want it, you gotta fucking steal it. You gotta snatch it. You gotta
take it from motherfuckers.
You gotta literally wrench it out of their fucking hands
and make sure they can't come back. Yeah. You know, I remember one time I'm like, at the end of this game, they'll be wearing our colors, and the women will be wearing our colors, and we'll be wearing their finger bones as a necklace.
Nice.
I don't know why.
I fucking like it.
We got to take
some ears and scalps. All right. Yeah. Hey, thanks for tuning in another episode
Thank
of Power
you guys
Athlete
very
Radio
much.
With Jim Wendler.
See you. Bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.